Our scripture text from this morning comes from the 49th chapter of Genesis. I haven't put any verse numbers here. I've put selections because even though this is a little bit of unorthodox, I have edited this text down for brevity. It's still really long, but it would have been twice as long. So I'm just going to try to give you a flavor of what's in this. Chuck loves long scripture readings, and so this one's for you. Do not fall asleep. This is the goodbye speech of Jacob, or Israel, one of the great patriarchs of the faith. And this is what he has to say as his sons are gathered around his deathbed. Okay, are you ready? This is uplifting stuff today. Okay, one person in the back is ready. Genesis 49. Listen here for what's being said in this text, and certainly for what the Spirit is saying to you and to the church right now. Then Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather around that I may tell you what will happen to you in the days to come. Assemble and hear, O sons of Jacob, listen to Israel, your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the first fruits of my vigor, excelling in rank and excelling in power. Unstable as water, you shall no longer excel. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Weapons of violence are their swords. May I never come into their council. May I not be joined to their company. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be upon the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down before you. Zebulun shall settle at the shore of the sea. Issachar is a strong donkey lying between sheepfolds. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. He shall be a snake by the roadside, a viper along the path that bites the horse's heels so that its rider falls backwards. I wait for your salvation, O Lord. Gad shall be raided by raiders, but he shall raid at their heels. Asher's food shall be rich, and he shall provide royal delicacies. Naphtali is a doe let loose that bears lovely fawns. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a spring. His branches run over the wall. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf, in the morning devouring the prey and at evening dividing the spoil. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them, blessing each one of them with a suitable blessing. Then he charged them, saying, I am about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my ancestors in the cave in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave in the field at Machpelah near Mamre in the land of Canaan, in the field that Abraham bought from Ephron the Hittite as a burial site. There Abraham and his wife Sarah were buried. There Isaac and his wife Rebekah were buried. There I buried Leah. The field and the cave that it is in were purchased from the Hittites. When Jacob had ended his charge to his son, he drew up his feet into the bed, breathed his last, and was gathered to his people. Holy wisdom, holy word, thanks be to God. So maybe you have had this experience. That you're at some kind of event, like maybe it's a goodbye party or some kind of retirement celebration, and you make a big deal out of saying a very meaningful goodbye to whomever this event is celebrating. Maybe you shed a few tears, you share some deep words that are in your heart, you say, goodbye, my friend. And then you're getting your coat, and you run into that same person again at the coat check, and you say, oh, goodbye, right? And then you go into the parking lot, and you're going in your car, and there they are again, right? Have you ever had this where you just have to say goodbye too many times, and it gets very awkward until you're finally like, okay, bye, see ya, you know, take care. So I've been thinking about that a little bit since I sort of dropped this bomb last week that we'll be heading off to the next chapter of my life. And I was thinking, how do we avoid it feeling like that, right? How do I avoid getting up here for four more weeks to say goodbye, goodbye, meaningful goodbye, goodbye. See you next week. So this is what I think about, right? I don't know what you think about 3 o'clock in the morning. This is what I think about. And so I decided something. I decided, let's do one last totally off program, off the wall, non-lectionary sermon series that you know I love to do, right? And I said, what should, that would be a fitting tribute. What should we talk about, though? What should we talk about? And I thought, I know what we should talk about. We should do a sermon series on the great farewell speeches of the huge characters in the Bible, right? What did they say as they were about to sort of cast off either into the next life or onto their next mission? This is the kind of thing I tell my lectionary group of colleagues, and they think, that's a great idea. And I want to do this because, and I said this last week, I do want in the next few weeks to really be sharing with you some of the things that I've been most grateful for during my years of ministry here. And one thing that is just at the top of my list that I feel most thankful for is that you are a great congregation to preach to. Did you know that? You are like the most fun congregation to preach to that I've just ever experienced in my life. You are curious and responsive and intelligent and wise, and the conversations that we have in response to preaching up here just really have enriched my ministry. A lot of times people say, give me compliments about my preaching, and I always say, you know, it's a lot about the congregation that you're preaching to. And so if I am any good, or if you have ever thought that, then thank yourselves, because I think it is being in conversation with you that has made me a decent preacher, and thinking with you and talking to you and hearing your stories. So I feel thankful for that, and now we're going to go on this little journey of the great farewell speeches of all the patriarchs as they die in the Bible. It's going to be wonderful. And the first one, as you just heard, is Jacob. Does anybody remember Jacob from Sunday school? Okay, somebody's like, oh, yeah, okay, Jacob, I'm just going to give you a quick summary, Jacob. This is the son of Isaac and Rebekah, right? There was Abraham and Sarah, and then there was Isaac and Rebekah, and then there's Jacob, right? He's the twin of Esau, right? Jacob, who schemed with his mother to cheat his older brother out of his inheritance, and then fled to his uncle's home where he agreed to work as an indentured servant for 7 years so that he could marry his cousin Rachel, who was very beautiful. But instead, he got tricked by his uncle into marrying his first cousin, Leah, who had a great personality, and then worked another 7 years so he actually could marry his love, Rachel, and somewhere in there also took on two concubines, additional wives, which explains why he was able to have 12 sons, including Joseph, who had a technicolor dream coat and got sold into slavery by his jealous brothers and eventually became a confidant of the Pharaoh of Egypt, where his brothers eventually came because of a famine in Canaan. And Joseph saw and recognized and forgave them and brought the whole family down from Egypt to ride out the famine in style, which is why when Jacob lies dying, he's dying in Egypt, gathered together with his sons. Okay, so that's Jacob. Remember all that? I should teach Sunday school. I should just say, forget this pastoring, man. I'm going right to second grade Sunday school. So now Jacob is at the end. And what I read earlier is what he has to say to his 12 sons at the end. And what I found so interesting kind of reading this is that he calls it a blessing. He says, I will give my sons a blessing. But how these things are a blessing is a little bit of a mystery to me. Was anybody really sort of tuned in while I was watching? Like, some of the stuff isn't that good. This is not what I would want my own parent to say to me at their deathbed. Reuben, unstable as water, you shall no longer excel. Like, that's just like a little bit of a downer, okay? And he goes on, Simeon and Levi, weapons of violence are their swords. May I never come into their council. May I not be joined to their company. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them. A blessing. Now, Judah, we feel like he's going to be okay. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. He shall have his brothers bow to him. That sounds all right. Issachar is a strong donkey, so he bowed his shoulder to the burden and became a slave. Not that great. This one really confused me, and I couldn't find an extra description of it. Anyway, Naphtali is a doe let loose that bears lovely fawns. Not really sure what that's about. Joseph, right, you could tell Joseph's going to be A-okay in the end because Jacob goes on forever about Joseph as if he didn't learn anything from before when he favored Joseph and his brothers kidnapped him and tried to kill him. But right here at his deathbed, he goes on, by the hands of the mighty one, by the name of the shepherd, the rock, the God of your father who will help you, bless you with blessings from heaven and blessings from the deep and blessings from the womb and blessing of your father and stronger blessings in the mountains and bounty may they be on the head of Joseph. On the brow of him who is set apart from his brothers. Right? Like, I just feel a little bit like that's going to cause some tension at the wake there, right? Bless you with a million blessings. Naphtali, we don't know what's going to happen to you. And Issachar, you're going to end up a slave. And Reuben, you're not going to excel. Now, a lot of these things we should say, if you've done a lot of reading in Genesis, are based on the history of this family, right? On things that have actually happened in the past. That seemed to be informing Jacob's perceptions of what will happen to their family in the future. Reuben, for instance, let his desires control him and therefore damaged his relationship to his father. That's a little R-rated bit. I'll leave for you to read on your own after this. Simeon and Levi were bloodthirsty in their pursuit of their sister's aggressors, right? Which is why Jacob seems to predict that their anger will continue to lead them down an unhelpful path. And Joseph was always a favorite. And I thought about this all week. You know, I'm reading this all week. And then, as I always do, like on Friday, I was like, I should have just stuck with the lectionary, man. We could have talked about Jesus as the bread of life. But I'm thinking about it. And I kept thinking, like, is this really fair? Is this really necessary? Like, how is this? How can you call this a blessing? And what do I do with this as a preacher trying to bless my own people in my own leave-taking? And so I really thought about it, and I prayed about it. And what I came to was this. What I thought I would do is I would go through one by one, kind of starting with the people that are physically gathered here and maybe going on to those that I anticipate are gathered online right now. And I would predict your future based on any obvious moral failings that I have observed during my many years here. So whoever would like to go first, just raise your hand. Okay, so we could do that offline later if you like, but I'm not going to do that, of course. But I did have to pass by that to sort of get into a reflection about what this could really mean for us. And I realized that I do actually see something here other than favoritism and pessimism. And that is simply that these statements, they seem to indicate that each one of these many brothers was known to his father. Right? There is something in this text, even though it's a little unsettling, there is something here about intimacy, about being seen and known by someone else exactly as we are, the good and the bad, right? And I think a further thing about intimacy is this, that it allows us to say difficult things to each other. It allows us to say difficult things to each other. Things like, Reuben, your lust will lead you down a dangerous path. Something like, Issachar, your violence will be your downfall, right? That's troubling, unsettling, but it's also intimacy, right? Intimate from the Latin intimus or inmost, intrinsic, but also intimatus, to announce or to make known. So someone with whom we have intimacy is someone who knows us well enough to see the inmost parts of us, but also someone who can announce those things to us in some particular way. And I was thinking about the fact that I'm realizing, of course, that the more intimate we are with someone, the more difficult it is to say goodbye to them because we are giving up a mirror into our inmost selves. So this last gift of Jacob, in a way, is like a look in that mirror where he tells them what he has known of them. And it might seem harsh. I think it is. This is probably, again, not the speech I would want to receive on my parents' deathbed. But I think it also seems, or so I sense after thinking about it a lot this week, it seems beautifully open and honest in a way. I think it speaks to the importance of relationships among all other things. And then it speaks to the continuing task that Jacob's family will have in leading and caring for and shepherding not only their family unit, but the great nation that will come for them, the nation of Israel, right? He's saying these things to them because they will need to continue in their work of being his heirs and leaders to their people. Now, of course, Jacob was preparing to die, right? He gathered his feet up into his bed. I'm not really sure what that means. I have some hypotheses, but I'm not ready to share. He gathers his feet up to his bed and he breathes his last. He is gathered to his ancestors. And of course, all our goodbyes in life are not because of death. We say goodbye to friends when we part ways. Sometimes we have to say goodbye to partners who have ceased to meet our needs. We say goodbye to pastors who move on to other callings. But we also say goodbye to other things, to closely held ideas that, or ideals that no longer serve us. We say goodbye to professions that have lost their joy, to places that we have loved. We say goodbye sometimes to visions of our lives that we know now will no longer come to be. And I think for any of those leave-takings to render us a blessing rather than simply a heartache, it is necessary to start by saying what is true, saying what we know about what has happened, and about what might be, and about how certain things came about, and about what we've lost and gained and hoped for and despaired of, and how all those things may inform our future. I think we have to start by saying that and saying what we see in the mirror. And I want to encourage you in your own lives, in whatever ways you are departing from certain things, to simply try the exercise that expresses that kind of honesty, if only to yourself. You know, I think we as individuals, as a community, and as a world are going through a time of immense change, right? Saying goodbye to things like the status quo, to things we had hoped for. And maybe we're not yet ready to say hello to what's next, but I think there is spiritual work to be done in that abyss between those two things. So here, I'm going to do a little practice, do a little homework, show you how it's done. How about that? Have you been thinking about which one of you would like to be reminded of your moral failures? Oh, Rachel, brave volunteer. How about I just hit up us all, okay? So let me just tell you. You know, I have loved, and this is not just blowing smoke, I have loved being the pastor of this church. This place has been a blessing to my life and a blessing to my family and a blessing to my ministry. I think from the first minute I arrived, your openness to me and my vision has been so profound and so affirming, and I will never forget that. You have been, it occurs to me, the ohana who welcomed us to Hawaii and then who welcomed our children into this world, right, and into the church, and I will never forget that. Your willingness to go on a journey with me, allowing me the freedom and creativity to explore new theological and programmatic territory, some of which was pretty out there, I can admit that. Your willingness to go on that journey, I think, was so energizing for me, and I think energizing for this church, and I will never forget that. And finally, I want to say, you know, your trust in me has been a real honor to bear. You know, in our conversations beside hospital beds and in walks on the beach, and in coffee shops and in your living rooms, you know, it has been a privilege to walk with you. And I think back and I think that it has been a privilege to be the person with whom we have said difficult things. I think we have said difficult things to each other. We have said things like, I disagree. We have said, I'm not sure what I believe. We have said, you hurt me. And said, I was wrong, and said, I forgive you, and said, I don't know what's ahead. And now we're having to say goodbye, and I think that's another difficult thing. But I'm glad that we can do this together. And I know that part of what's making it hard for us to say goodbye is that familiarity, you know? Like, I realize it's always painful to try to regress to a former stage of intimacy. To try to go from partners to friends is really challenging. It doesn't always work. To try to go to friends to acquaintances can be awkward and fraught. It's like trying to rip off a Band-Aid, right? Like you've been stuck together. in ways that are healing and helpful and important and wonderful, but even the time of right kind of hurts to separate, and I feel that. But I'm also grateful for that discomfort because I think it's a sign of our deep connection, our admiration for each other, and in that is a blessing. One final affirmation is, it's been an honor to serve this church because I believe so profoundly in its mission, right? To bring a progressive witness to this community and to embody God's inclusive love in this community and to create a place of welcome for those on so many different steps of the spiritual journey. I think that is important. I think that is unique, and I'm so glad to have been part of it. But there's more. Now, this is the other part, right? That was like Judah. This is like Reuben. There will be challenges ahead for this church. You will have to decide if you believe in this witness that we've been working on together as much as I believe in it and as much as my articulation of it. You will have to see that this place is much bigger than my leadership and its gifts much, much bigger than my gifts. And if you do see that, then you will have to engage. And you will have to show up and participate and contribute and most of all to lead, perhaps in more profound ways than you have had to before. Because this church needs you, and this time in the history of the world needs the church. And if you want to continue to say what this church has to say, then you have to lift it up. And from now on, when someone says, who can help with this? You cannot say, Pastor Liz can help with that. She can do anything. Said you will have to say, when someone says, who can help? You will have to say, me, I can. I can. Here I am, Lord. I think you will have to prioritize, to reinforce, to renew your connections to each other, not just the each other that you've known for a long, many years, but the each other that includes the other you've not come yet to know. You will have to build your relationship like a web, starting with those strands that run from one to another, not through the central node, right? Each of you will have to decide whether your participation here extends only to the boundary of your own edification, or whether it runs beyond that to support something bigger and something broader and something ultimately much more important. And let me tell you, I know you can do it because I know you so well. You are wise and brave and dedicated and generous and kind and talented and hilarious. And I know that. And I trust that after me, the Spirit will bring another amazing leader into the midst who will help equip you for that task. I know perhaps you can't see that right now, but I can if it's okay. If it seems hard, I feel that. I really do. And if you're still too sad, that's okay too. But I really hope that at some point you will find in these encouragements can become a blessing. When you lift your head and see what can become and what will become, you will feel motivated to engage in that blessing in a new way. But wait, there's more. There is one more thing that I know. And that is that there is someone else who knows you even more than I do. And who is with you at this very moment. And of course, that is the loving God. God who has seen you and sees you now and will see you, all of you, every part. And who loves you with a love more profound than you could ever know. That love which, of course, we've come to know in Jesus. I know that God is with you. That God who joins in your shouts of triumph and who hears your whispers of doubt in the middle of the night. I know that that God who knew you from the beginning and that God who will walk with you to the end and beyond, that God is with you now. God who has the most intimate knowledge of your gifts and liabilities and your idiosyncrasies and your hopes and your fears and your worries and your dreams, that God never departs from us. That God remains with you and with me. That God remains within you and within me and among all of us always. And that God which will keep us forever connected through the vine in which we abide, and that is the Christ, that is the blessing among all the good words and the hard words, and that is certainly the blessing that leads us into our future. So I want to assure you of those things and thank you for the opportunity to go on this last little journey of these funny texts through the story that has brought us together and that will keep us together. So offer those words in the name of the God who created, redeemed, and sustained us always. Amen.